joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
This unconstitutional pause in funding will have a devastating impact.
Widespread confusion after President Trump's federal funding freeze.
We're Chicago. We're built different. We're not going to be afraid.
Mayor Johnson reacts to the Trump administration's immigration raids. Our Spotlight Politics team has the latest. Calls for cancer warning labels on alcohol. The impact of booze on your health.
I'm really envisioning tools that can assist us physically and not just, you know, in computer screens.
And we take you inside a local lab connecting computers with the human body. And now to some of today's top stories. A federal judge has temporarily blocked a Trump administration order that froze federal aid, a move that sent nonprofits and some government agencies into a panic over funding for early education, meals programs, and veterans services, to name a few. The White House says the order is not a sweeping freeze on all federal aid, that those programs will be untouched. In her first news briefing since the administration took office, Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt attempted to clarify which programs will be affected.
And the reason for this is to ensure that every penny that is going out the door is not conflicting with the executive orders and actions that this president has taken. So what does this pause mean? It means no more funding for illegal DEI programs. It means no more funding for the Green New Scam that has cost American taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. It means no more funding for transgenderism and wokeness across our federal bureaucracy and agencies.
But in response this afternoon, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says the Trump administration is lying. While they were assured that programs like Head Start, Meals on Wheels, and Low-Income Housing Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP, wouldn't be affected, Pritzker says this morning they were.
This morning, along with all 50 states across the country, we discovered that our ability to access critical federal funding had been cut off. And now the administration would like us to believe that these were just coincidental website outages. Donald Trump and his administration have not earned the benefit of the doubt. They are either lying to us or they are critically incompetent.
Mayor Brandon Johnson is declining to respond to a request to testify before Congress on Chicago's status as a sanctuary city. At a news conference today, Johnson referred questions to the city's top lawyer, who says the letter sent by Kentucky Congressman James Comer was under, quote, legal review. The letter does not have the legal force of a subpoena. If Johnson refuses to appear, it could open a new front in the ongoing battle with the U.S. House and the Trump administration, which is attempting to strip sanctuary cities of all federal funding. Also called to testify are the mayors of Boston, Denver, and New York City. That hearing is scheduled for February 11th. Meanwhile, federal officials have detained around 100 people in the Chicago area as part of ramped-up immigration raids. That's according to Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling. However, Snelling adds that he doesn't know how many of those detained have criminal records. President Donald Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, vowed to initially focus on deporting undocumented immigrants who've been convicted of serious crimes, but said undocumented immigrants who agents encounter will also be detained. Our Spotlight Politics team will have more on all of this in just a few minutes. Humanity has edged closer than ever to catastrophe. That's the meaning of the iconic doomsday clock being moved 1 second closer to midnight at 89 seconds, the closest it's ever been. The Chicago-based Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, whose board includes 9 Nobel laureates, made the annual update today based on global nuclear weapons threats, the climate crisis, and disruptive technologies like artificial intelligence. The group calls on global leaders, particularly those in the U.S., China, and Russia, to mitigate those threats. Up next, our Spotlight Politics team dives into the local impact of the Trump administration's recent moves.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The Trump administration's decision to freeze funds for federal grants and loans created widespread confusion. And ICE agents carry out enforcement raids across the Chicago area amid a crackdown on illegal immigration. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. Okay, so before we get to all of that, let's just hear a little bit of what Mayor Johnson had to say today about that controversial federal funding pause.
This is something that is well outside the purview of the executive office. These appropriations have been mandated by the legislative branch. These are laws.
Okay, so Amanda, a little bit of late-breaking news on that funding freeze. What can you tell us? We mentioned a little bit of it earlier.
Yeah, there has been an order from a federal judge that temporarily puts on hold that hold. And so money will keep flowing, but folks are still very much on edge. I mean, this is a temporary hold from a judge until just Monday. There is a lawsuit. This is because of a lawsuit filed by a bunch of really organizations representing nonprofits, but a group of Democratic-led states, including Illinois, have also filed suit separately. So you have that going. I think either way, this is an immense amount of unease at this point. I will add that something else that has changed, perhaps you saw stories earlier, that Illinois was unable to access the Medicaid portal that really allows dollars to flow for, this is the government program that provides low-income folks with essentially health insurance. Illinois is now able to get back on board with that. There's some controversy as to what happened and why, but access is once again on.
Okay. New Trump administration, the decision to pause these federal grants was already having an impact. You mentioned access to health care. And we heard from Governor Pritzker a little bit earlier. Amanda, what else did he tell us?
I mean, he had a lot to say. Not surprisingly, he is upset about this. Their belief is very much that this is an illegal move by President Trump's administration. The governor said that this is not only illegal, but he said this is cruel. And he said, do not buy some of the defense that you heard from the new White House press secretary, that perhaps that outage, for example, with the Medicaid website was just some sort of computer glitch or a website problem. He said, no, you cannot believe the Trump administration, and that he believes that instead this was either incompetence, as you heard the governor say in that spot, or that this is, again, Trump lying. I also spoke, by the way, with Congressman Brent Schneider. He said that he believes that this whole exercise is really a means of saving funding so that you can instead have the Trump administration passed through these tax breaks to, he said, friends like oligarchs and Elon Musk.
Okay. Nick, what impact could this have on funding, transportation funding, particularly the Red Line extension?
Yeah, that big ticket item that everybody has been paying so much attention to, $1.9 billion in federal funding that was approved last month. There was a big ceremony to celebrate it, you know, earlier this month. There was a real effort to get that agreement signed and get moving on that project before the change in administrations. I spoke with the CTA spokesperson earlier today who said that, you know, the CTA does not believe that this has any, you know, this pause does not have any effect, that the CTA's law department is kind of reviewing the order. But, you know, when you look at the long list of, you know, when they put out a guidance from, you know, from the Trump administration showing all the many grant programs, it's not necessarily ones that just do these, you know, quote unquote, you know, sort of wokeism things that we heard from in that press conference. It is, you know, buses and trains. It is, you know, pipeline safety. It is, you know, ports. There's all sorts of funding just on the transportation side and well beyond that that don't really have any ideological, you know, backing to them and that have had long bipartisan support. So for now, CTA says they're confident that that red line money is going to come through. But obviously, with all the upheaval we've seen, it's anybody's guess.
The attorneys general of several states, including our own Kwame Raoul, they are asking the courts to block this funding freeze. Amanda, it sounds like it is a different suit that has actually achieved that temporary stay for now. But on what grounds are the attorneys general challenging this?
Well, they're saying that in fact, Attorney General Raoul said that this was an inauguration, not a coronation, and that the president does not have unilateral ability to cancel funding that Congress has passed into law and provided for. So this is really a separation of power sort of argument. And I'll add that this is really a very similar coalition to what we saw trying to take away and file lawsuits against the birthright citizenship executive order. So you're seeing these Democratic-led states really come together, and they're calling themselves a coalition.
So we also heard from Police Superintendent Larry Snelling today, and he talked about the immigration raids, of course, that everybody's been covering this week that are happening in the city. Here's a little bit of what he said.
What we have not seen is that we have not seen federal agents running through Chicago looking for children, going to work locations and grabbing people.
Heather, what do we know about the scale of the raids in Chicago so far?
Well, Superintendent Snelling told us today that he believes about 100 people have detained, not just in Chicago, but sort of the greater Chicagoland area. What he couldn't tell us, whether any of those people have criminal records. Now, the Trump administration has been saying that they're going after, quote unquote, the worst of the worst, people who have been convicted of serious crimes and moving to deport them. But it's not clear whether they are also seeking to detain people who are otherwise law-abiding people living in Chicago but committed a crime by entering the country illegally or overstaying their permission. And that, I think, is the fundamental question that a lot of Chicagoans are focused on and are worried about, because there's not a lot of information coming from the federal government, and it's leading to more of that fear and uncertainty. I pressed Superintendent Snelling on this because he really sort of went to great lengths to try to tell people to calm down, to go to school, to go to work, to go about their business. But if he can't tell Chicagoans that federal agents are not picking up sort of not criminals, I think that that is cold comfort to a lot of people who worry about taking their kids to school but not being able to pick them up afterwards. And that, I think, is a really tough position for a lot of Chicagoans to be in tonight.
Yeah. A guarantee that he can't make. And it sounds like, you know, the Trump administration, like you said, they have said that they would prioritize migrants who were criminals, but it sounds like we don't necessarily know a whole lot about the folks that they have rounded up so far. And as we heard earlier, Mayor Johnson, he's been called to testify before Congress, along with the mayors of three other sanctuary cities, Boston, Denver, New York City. But he's declining to respond and declining to tell us why he's declining to respond. Why is that? What's going on?
Well, he sort of deferred all questions to the city's top lawyer, Mary Richardson Lowry, who said, look, this is a legal process. They sent us a letter. Our lawyers are going to look at it. We're going to respond, and we're going to handle it step by step. It's clear that the Republican-controlled House sort of sees this as the first step towards stripping Chicago of all of its federal funds, which was another one of President Trump's early executive orders. So the stakes for the city are very high. The city gets roughly $4 billion in federal aid every year. So this is not something that the mayor or anybody sort of working for the city wants to respond sort of without thoughtfulness. What did strike me as interesting is that Mary Richardson Lowry was very pointed in her defense of the city's welcoming city ordinance and its status as a sanctuary city, which of course is designed to reassure undocumented immigrants that they can get the needed services, health care, police protection, the other things that they need. But she said, we do not genuflect, even when asked. And I thought that that is perhaps a signal of how this will play out going forward.
It's been a fun week, everybody.
It's Tuesday, Brandon.
It's Tuesday. What a long week today has been. All right, that's Spotlight. Heather, Amanda, Nick, thanks, everybody. Up next, what doctors say about the link between alcohol and cancer. Quarter of Americans embrace January as a chance to rethink their relationship with alcohol. But as dry January winds down, the U.S. Surgeon General is encouraging people to be more mindful of their drinking throughout the year. Earlier this month, Dr. Vivek Murthy warned that light or even moderate drinking is harmful enough that he's calling for cancer warning labels on alcohol, just like on cigarettes. Here to take a hard look at how alcohol impacts our health is Dr. Ashish Didwania, Vice Chair for Education at Northwestern's School of Medicine. Dr. Didwania, thank you for joining us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So how does this new recommendation challenge what we've previously known or thought about the impact of drinking on our health?
I think the previous guidelines suggested that moderate alcohol consumption was reasonable for Americans, for people. And this is challenging that by saying there is risk and danger, particularly around cancer.
That even moderate drinking is not healthy. In moderate being one a day, one drink a day for women, and how many for men?
14 or less, and I think that's one of the most important.
14 ounces?
14 drinks in a week.
In a week, okay.
In a week,
like,
yes.
14 drinks a day is a lot.
So that's one of the most important aspects of this report in the news is what is moderate alcohol consumption and what do people know about what they're drinking? So again, 7 drinks a week or less for a woman. Some of the reports say, you know, averaging 1 drink a day, mm-hmm. and for men, 14 drinks or less in a week or 2 drinks a day.
Twice as much for men then. How does this square with previous research that we had heard that maybe a glass of red wine is actually good for your heart?
A lot of those reports were based on studies that were not deemed to be very rigorous. When put up to the test and more rigorous studies were done, and even actually some of the reports that are coming out now that suggest drinking at moderate levels might be good for our heart, a lot of the experts in the field believe that that research is not square and we should not be drinking to reduce our heart health. And so the new report suggesting cancer is a concern and our existing understanding that there isn't a heart health benefit should make us re-examine our moderate use habits and the recommendations that are out there.
What do we know about how drinking leads to cancer?
So alcohol is metabolized by our body. There's a metabolite called acetaldehyde. And both in animal research as well as in some of the understanding in humans is that metabolite can cause oxidative stress that causes mutations that lead to cancer.
Are some people or some populations more at risk than others?
It's a great question. If there's an individual that has a family history of cancer, if there's people on certain medications, that probably increases their risk. The studies are population-wide, and so the findings are, as a population, the more we drink, the more our cancer risk goes up. It's important to add that at moderate alcohol use, that's 7 or 14 drinks, the risks go up, but they're still small. And so that's why we're not in a period of saying nobody should drink and we need to go back to abstaining and prohibition. So there's a lot of evidence out there. There are uncertainties and some controversies, and that's where it's settling is less is more, risks are low, but there is a risk.
There is a risk, hence, and it sounds like that is the reason. It is enough of a risk, though, that the Surgeon General suggests a warning label on alcohol like the one that we see on cigarettes.
Yeah, so warning labels, they also carry controversy, like so many things. Some countries are more forward about warning labels. We're maybe down the middle. Cigarettes, that's age old now. But the risks with cigarettes were known to be greater, and the warning labels have made an impact. There's going to be controversy and debate about alcohol as a warning label or cancer as a warning label on alcohol. And I view it as education. If we can educate the public about risk, understanding that there is risk, the risks vary, the risk may be small, and again, importantly, understand what category of drinking you fall in. A lot of us think we're drinking in a moderate level, but if you actually look at the numbers in the studies, we might be heavy alcohol consumers. So I view the warning labels in their controversy as a means of educating the public.
And to that point of, you know, sort of knowing what category of drinker you fall into, mm-hmm. do we need to evaluate our relationship with booze altogether?
For sure. I think this is a call to every individual to say and ask themselves, let me be honest and understand how I use alcohol. There is clearly positive aspects we view in our society, social connectivity, relaxation, that remains. But if we're honest with ourselves about how much we consume in a day, in a week, we understand some of these some of this research in some of these categories, and we can say, okay, I am in that moderate use category. That's okay, but even there, less is more. Or that concerning, I'm in the heavy use category, and I know there's no debate about that. I should reduce. And then talk to your doctor, talk to your healthcare provider, and they can give you some more information about these reports and then how to cut back.
What more research do you think is needed on this topic? What else do we need to know?
You know, there's so much research on it. A lot of it's observational research. So these reports are finding associations. The Surgeon General actually said it was causal, a causation. But randomized controlled trials, which are hard to do, they can still yield unwieldy results, but more research using randomized controlled trials will help for these categories that we're now looking at, which is moderate use. And even within moderate use, the direction things are going in is men, instead of 14 drinks in a week, should be down to 7 or less in a week. And women already at 7 or less per week, the cutoff should be potentially lower. So can we do studies that look at these lower numbers and relieve some of the anxiety around drinking? So we say, you know, it's okay. The risks are low, and low moderate use is okay.
You can still drink, but you should probably cut it off sooner than what we've previously been telling people.
That's right.
All right. That's where we'll have to leave it. Dr. Ashish Didwania, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Up next, using technology to better connect with the human body. We'll explain right after this. We are undeniably in a new era of technology where we can use computers to research and explore different parts of the world, or even utilize artificial intelligence to write papers or create grocery lists. Our Joanna Hernandez visits the University of Chicago to learn how a professor and his students are developing devices that connect computers with the human body.
The challenge here is that we don't have any camera.
Yeah,
or sensing modality.
Pedro Lopez leads the Human Computer Integration Lab at the University of Chicago. In this lab, you can find students working on a smartwatch incorporating muscle stimulation, an augmented headset that expands our perception, or a device to assist individuals in learning the drums.
Think of these like a personal trainer that lives with you at all times, these little wearable devices, but they connect intimately to your body. They connect your muscles, they understand what help you need.
The connection Lopez describes links the human body to computers, aiming to empower rather than replace individuals.
The interactive system is there to kind of give you the right amount of feedback you need at every step.
Ready?
Whoa, that is cool.
Okay.
That's not me. That is not me.
With the help of electrical muscle sensors, the computer sends electrical pulses through the skin to target nerves or muscles. In this case, it sent a small pulse to my arm so that it could move.
It's like the same principle that you send a small current from your brain to your muscle. We're just sending it like externally through computer.
Yoon Ho is a student in the classroom exploring how human-computer integration methods can help teach new skills.
What if we can download this video into a program and play it back to your muscle?
Wow.
So we're going to play the pattern back with your muscle. 3, 2, go.
Then there's Yudai Tanaka, developing a smartwatch that uses muscle stimulation, an interest he says sparked during his time as a DJ.
We are really excited about how can we make these kind of smartwatches more intimately connected to your body. So what you can see here, this smartwatch can move my body. So as I press this button, my finger moves right and left.
What do you envision this helping with? Like, how would this help, someone?
Yeah. So if the device can connect it to your body, it can, for instance, assist people's finger movement. For instance, we're really excited, if someone is not good at moving your hands, sometimes people are shaky, and a device can assist, to stabilize your finger movement.
Tanaka says a device like this has the potential to help individuals who are blind or disabled.
You use it for whatever you want it to be used. So a lot of our participants envision using this for learning musical skills. Other, for example, we're talking about people who are blind or deaf might use it for navigation or understanding cues in the environment that they normally cannot access.
A future they envision where computers improve our lives by blending computer science, psychology, and design, enhancing a user's experience.
There's such a demand for physical skills today, and so many people are forgetting how to do carpentry, how to, shape a wooden vessel or how to make, I don't know, pottery and etc. If we can bring computers into that equation, you don't need to just watch videos. You maybe don't have access to a physical teacher all the time, but have the assistance that computers provide. Computers can tailor the learning curve.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
These devices are still being developed, but Professor Lopez tells us he hopes to see his students' inventions helping people one day. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And you can also follow us on Blue Sky at WTTW. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Members of Chicago's transgender community react to the Trump administration's rolling back of protections. And why some Chicagoans are afraid to go to the South and West Sides. Local authors explore that question. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.